Our next speaker this morning is Mr. Ward Sproat, who is was appointed by President George W. Bush as the director of the Department of Energy's Office of Civilian Radioactive Waste Management. The office is responsible for developing the nation's waste disposal system for spent nuclear fuel and high-level radioactive waste as mandated by the Nuclear Policy Act. Prior to this appointment, Mr. Sproat was a managing partner of McNeil Sproat & Associates, working on broad-based energy solutions. And prior to that, he held the position of Vice President for International Projects for Exelon Generation, which included serving as a Chief Operating Officer for the Pebble Bed Modular Reactor Board in the Republic of South Africa. Welcome, Mr. Sproat.
Well, good morning, everybody. And on behalf of Secretary Bodman, he sends his congratulations to Frank and thanks for many years of service to the country and trying to work out the issues associated with nuclear waste. When he got the invitation to come, he said, I really need to send the guy who's most familiar with what we're doing on this. So I got asked to come, and it's very much an honor to be here at this presentation. At your symposium, and thank you very much for the invitation. I'm a little bit, this is the most PhDs I've ever been in a room with. I feel like I should be giving my doctoral presentation here, but that's not the case. First of all, I have to give my disclaimer. I am going to be saying some things here that do not reflect necessarily the policy of the administration. I'm here this morning as the guy who's got the responsibility to implement the nation's high-level waste repository program, much of which a number of you in this room had a hand in getting us to where we are. And I've only been involved in this for a year and a half because, as you heard from my background, I've come from the commercial nuclear sector. And I decided to take this job because I believe very firmly that this country needs nuclear as part of its strategic energy options going into the future, and that I believe also very strongly that the high-level nuclear waste issue needs to have visible, substantial progress in order for that option to be on the table for this country going forward. And so I felt a way I could contribute to that is to bring my private sector expertise to this program to see if I could get Yucca Mountain unstuck and move it forward. So what I'm going to do this morning is to talk to you about my perspective on the things I've observed in the 18 months that I've been involved in running this program, and to give you what I'll call the real-world implementation challenges that I'm facing, the Department of Energy is facing, and the country's facing in trying to make the repository program a reality. Here, the next slide. So I'm going to go quickly over kind of the historical timeline. Many of you are familiar with this. Some of you may not. I found it very interesting as I went through it to get myself educated. I think it provides a baseline for the discussions we'll have here over the next 2 days. I want to talk about the regulatory challenges, the legal hurdles, and the political realities as I see them, as I've become familiar with them as we've gone forward. And I do want to talk about the path forward. So, starting out as early as 1957, the National Academy of Sciences said we ought to have deep geologic repository for high-level nuclear waste. That's a while ago. That's a while ago. And you can see as we go through here, we got through 1977 when President Carter said no reprocessing. The Nuclear Waste Policy Act was passed in 82. President Reagan signed it in 83. And the key things in that act are listed here, which said the government's going to be responsible for getting rid of it, created the office, which now I'm in charge of, and it set up the program to evaluate the sites, and it set up the Nuclear Waste Fund. And I'm going to talk about that issue in quite a bit of detail going forward here because it's such a critical aspect of making this program a reality. As the timeline went on, there were originally, some of you, I'm sure a number of you remember this, there were 9 potential sites identified in Washington State, Nevada, Utah, Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. It further, as it went through, Secretary Harrington at that time nominated 5 sites. President Reagan approved 3 sites. And eventually in 1987, when the amendment to the Nuclear Waste Policy Act was passed, Yucca Mountain was selected by the Congress as the one site to be evaluated for the nation's high-level waste repository. Moving forward, the 1992 Congress decided that the EPA should set the radiation protection standard for Yucca Mountain based on the National Academy's recommendation. I know a number, some of you in this room were involved with that. I'm going to talk about that in a minute also. And finally, in 2002, the Secretary recommended to the President that based on extensive studies, almost 20 years of study at Yucca Mountain at that site, the site was appropriate as the site for the nation's high-level waste repository. Secretary Abraham made the recommendation in February. President Bush approved it in February. Governor Kenny Gwynne, as per the law, rejected the recommendation. Both houses of Congress overrode the veto of the state of Nevada. Now, some people don't remember that, even though it was only about 5 years ago, but basically the Congress, both houses of the Congress, decided Yucca Mountain's the place. Go see if you can get it licensed. That's how we got to Yucca Mountain, and that's where we are in the process right now. Next slide. So the next step in the process is go see if you can get a license from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to go build and operate the nation's high-level waste repository at Yucca Mountain, Nevada. That's where we are. The primary regulatory framework for that is under the NRC's regulations, 10 CFR Part 63. Now, I'd like to point out to this group some unique aspects of this regulation that, coming from the private sector, I found somewhat unique and interesting. Obviously, this is a first-of-a-kind regulation. There aren't any other regulations really in a lot of detail that have ever been tried on licensing a high-level waste repository. There was 10 CFR Part 60, which is kind of like the generic regulation, but then Part 63 was developed just for Yucca Mountain. But what the implications of this are is that the regulator has never reviewed or regulated to it. The licensee or the applicant has never tried to design to something like this before. And quite frankly, everybody's learning at the same time. So whether it's the applicant, whether it's the regulator, whether it's the courts, everybody's trying to figure out, well, okay, we can read the words, but exactly how do you do this and how does it make sense? Point of this point, you know, my point here is that this is a learning experience. You know, it's not like this is nuclear plant number 95 that we're going in to license. This is starting from scratch and is a learning process for all of us involved. Second point is, this is a risk-informed, performance-based regulation. And in the commercial nuclear world, we are very familiar with and comfortable with deterministic regulation. You will build something, and it needs to meet this set of requirements. All of us, though, over time, have gotten much more attuned to a risk-informed, performance-based regulation. You know, this makes a lot more sense. Let's concentrate on the things that are really important to risk. Problem is, we really haven't done it before. You know, everybody's got some really good ideas of how it should work, but when it comes down to trying to figure out how to address a specific design issue under this kind of a regulatory regime, we are learning. So, for example, in my case, well, let me just give you one example. What are the risks associated with long-term criticality of buried nuclear spent fuel 10 to 20,000 years out in the future? Right now, because everybody in this room understands the concept of risk of probability and consequences, and we're spending a lot of time calculating the probabilities of inadvertent criticality in nuclear waste packages 20 to 50,000 years in the future. You can calculate that. How do you come up with the consequences? Personally, I don't believe there are going to be any consequences to a package of spent nuclear fuel 1,000 feet below the surface in a rock formation if it goes critical 50,000 years in the future. But under the regulatory regime, we have to come up with figuring out do a more detailed analysis of what those consequences are. Nobody knows how to do it. They can't figure it out. Without a substantial research program, which on a cost-benefit basis is like, Is that really where you want to spend your money? So as a result, we're figuring out how to make sure the probability of an inadvertent criticality 50,000 years in the future doesn't happen. One example of trying to implement a risk-informed, performance-based regulation that nobody's ever done before and some of the real-world challenges we're facing in doing that. Now, the other thing about Part 63, when I got into this and I sat down, I actually read it and to try and educate myself about it. And there are an awful lot of things in Part 63, and I'm saying this very carefully because I have a couple ex-NRC chairmen here. As I read it, there were a couple things in there. What were they thinking when they wrote this? There's some really good ideas in Part 63. For example, it's a multi-stage licensing process. You get your construction authorization based on your design. You get to build your repository. When you're done building it, you go back to the NRC and said, we build it the way we said we were going to when we licensed it, and now we're ready to operate it. We've got our people trained, we've got our people qualified, we've got our emergency plans in place, we've got our procedures in place, and the NRC reviews that and then says, yes, you do. Here's your license to receive and possess and operate the repository. Great steps. And then there's a third step. 100 years in the future, 150 years in the future, you go back to the NRC and say, we now have everything in the repository. We've had a performance confirmation program, as required by the regulation, over the last 100, 150 years. The repository system is actually working the way we predicted. We believe we now know enough that it's now time to permanently close the repository. The NRC reviews all that information and they make a decision. Yes, you can close the repository. Great, I like that. Multi-step process. Is informed by the experience of the 100 years of operation of the repository of an ongoing performance confirmation program, makes a lot of sense. Except that, before you can even build a damn thing, you've got to do your long-term performance confirmation and show that a million years in the future, it's going to operate this way. And so, what's not clear to me is the thinking that says, yes, you've got this multi-step process. You have to maintain retrievability, that if for some reason 100 years in the future you decide you want to take stuff back out, you've got to take it back out. You've got to maintain retrievability. So in spite of retrievability, in spite of performance confirmation program, you've got to demonstrate a quote-unquote million-year performance standard before you can build it. Don't understand it. But that's the way the regulation's written. And that's one of the challenges that we face. My other favorite regulation, 40 CFR 197, which is the EPA standard. Now, the intent is to codify the recommendations of the National Academy of Sciences associated with the long-term performance standards, radiation performance standards for the repository. Now, I just want to, this says it requires performance. The draft requires performance confirmation for the period of geologic stability, which is what the National Academy report used, for approximately a million years. Now, probably everybody in this room is aware that that draft, revised draft of that standard, was issued a little over two and a half years ago for comment. Isn't out yet. A year ago, in December of 2006, in meetings with the EPA and meetings, interagency discussions, we expected that revised standard to be out within a month or two. Over a year later, the standard's not out. Why not? The reason it's not out is because the EPA staff can't figure out within their EPA regulatory framework, which is radiation's bad, keep it as low as you possibly can, and protect, you know, keep the numbers certain and low for as long as you can. They can't figure out how to translate the National Academy's recommendation and the uncertainties associated with long-term prediction into a regulation that fits within their regulatory framework. So the discussions going on right now and have been going on for well over a year and a half is how do you set that regulation up, 10 CFR or 40 CFR 197, to accommodate this very, very long-term regulatory period. That is the heart of the issue. Next slide. Now, besides the regulatory hurdles, there's some legal hurdles. One is the funding mechanism's broken. I talked earlier about the Nuclear Waste Fund. the fund that brings $750 million a year into the federal government from the nuclear utilities because they pay 1 mil per kilowatt hour of all nuclear generation, specifically to pay the government to get rid of their nuclear waste and a high level and their spent fuel. $750 million a year comes into the federal government, of which Congress appropriates some percentage to my program for us to actually go design and build the repository. And the balance that they don't appropriate supposedly goes in the nuclear waste fund. The nuclear waste fund is got a balance right now of $20.5 billion. And I'm holding a laddered portfolio of treasury bonds and zero coupon bonds worth $20.5 billion. Minor problem is I can't spend it. I can't get my hands on it. And one of the reasons I can't is because once the Nuclear Waste Policy Act was set up and the Nuclear Waste Fund was set up, 4 or 5 years later, the Grams-Holling-Rudman Budget Act was passed, and all the receipts coming into the federal government from the utilities are classified as mandatory receipts. The law says we have to receive it. They're mandatory receipts. This makes sense to me. Unfortunately, the repository program is classified as a discretionary program. We can do it or not do it. And the law does not allow mandatory receipts to be used to pay for discretionary programs. As a result, money comes in, $750 million a year, and the interest generated on the fund, which is close to $1 billion a year now. It's over $900 million a year. All of that money gets used as a line offset against the federal deficit. So essentially, the money coming in from the utilities and the interest generated on the nuclear waste fund are essentially used to reduce the federal deficit in the year they come in. And that's why if I ever want to use the nuclear waste fund to actually build the repository, it's all going to be deficit spending. It's because essentially the money's already been spent. The repository will not get built until that issue gets fixed. It just won't happen. The cash flows needed to build the repository are between $1.5 and $1.9 billion a year for the next 20-some years. And right now we're getting appropriated between $350 and $500 million a year. So there's a factor of three in terms of the funding that we're of an annual shortfall. It ain't going to happen until that issue gets fixed. We did have a hearing in front of the House Budget Committee to get them spun up about this, and Congressman Spratt from South Carolina is sufficiently interested. Next stop is try to get the Senate spun up about it. But right now, that's the key issue, and that's the one area that I personally am going to be very heavily involved with over the next remaining year I have before I get fired to work on that. Obviously, there's the other issues associated with states' rights versus federal preemption. Water rights for the state of Nevada is an issue. The issue of transportation, building a railroad in Nevada, taking waste across the country in terms of federal government preemption rights over the state regulation of transportation. RCRA, Resource Conservation Recovery Act, where the EPA requirements for disposal of various materials has been delegated to the states, that could be a problem. But you know, it's again something else that needs to be addressed. And finally, land withdrawal. Something else that people don't really recognize too much is even though the federal government owns Yucca Mountain site, the land itself, the Geologic Repository Operations Area or GROA, requires the NRC will require the federal government to show the Secretary of Energy to show that we have control of that in perpetuity. That can only be done through land withdrawal, as was done with WIP. That hasn't been done yet. That can only be done through legislation. So that is another legal hurdle that's out there. Personally, I believe all of these can be addressed, and I believe they can be addressed in a relatively straightforward way, but they won't be addressed until the Congress sees that the Department of Energy is really making measurable progress in moving the repository forward and they start to gain some confidence that we're actually going to pull this off. That's my personal belief. Then there are political realities. And these are the political realities as Ward Sproat sees them, as a political appointee of a program by a person who's really not politically attuned. One is, local politics change over time. Everybody knows the state of Nevada doesn't want Yucca Mountain. Did you know the state of Nevada in 1975, the state assembly passed a resolution signed by the governor that said we should go to the Department of Energy, or to IRTA at the time, whatever it was, and that we want the nation's high-level waste repository in Nevada, and we also want a solar power research facility built out on the test site at the same time. How many of you knew that? A couple. So the point is when you hear about the opposition to the state of Nevada, everybody hates it. In 1975, 30 years ago, the state's official position was, we want the repository. My point is, things change over time. And when you take a look at nuclear waste and the concept of management of nuclear waste, this is a long-term proposition. These are programs that go on over decades, if not a century. Politics can change very quickly in a period of a few years. This is a reality that you need to be aware of, that politics change over time on a time scale that's much shorter than the time scale that's needed to manage nuclear waste. And the players change over time. Governors change every 4 years, senators change possibly every six. So who you may negotiate with today to try and work a deal is not going to be the same person that's there 10 years later when you're ready to actually go build the thing. It's, you have to recognize the reality of who you're talking to today may not be there when it comes time to actually implement the agreement that you thought you had. There are no incentives for politicians to take a risk on nuclear waste. I've had two meetings with two different governors in the state of Nevada, private meetings in their office. And without relating exactly what they said, the bottom line was, look, why should I, personally, I can see some really economic advantages to the state if we go forward with this. It's out in a very remote area of the state. Nobody lives out there. This actually might make sense if we could structure a deal. There's nothing in it for me politically to work a deal with the Department of Energy, because as soon as I do, all of the opponents are going to seize on that. And if I won my last election by 5 percentage points, 10 percentage points, that could swing the results of the re-election just enough to get me to lose. What's the incentive for me to say, I think we ought to go do this? That's a political reality. The politicians won't take a risk on nuclear waste. This may sound, this may be a little bit controversial. Nobody wants nuclear waste. Nye County, which is the host county for the repository in Nevada, wants the repository. They have been very public about it. They want the repository. They actually want the economic benefits that come with the repository. They don't want the nuclear waste. They want the economic benefits. But recognize what's going on here. The host county in Nevada says, I want this. It's their official position. They're a cooperating agency in the environmental protection environmental impact statement. Surrounding counties don't want it. The state government doesn't want it. And the senior senator from the state of Nevada doesn't want it. So as a result, this county is getting all this political pressure from the rest of the state. So this is the reality. And so while we talk about, getting public involvement, and we talk about, getting folks involved and understanding the risks, that's really nice, and I think it's absolutely the right thing to do, don't think it's going to solve the problem. Because the realities on the ground that the folks who are trying to make this work face are these three key things of the politicians and the local politics. There has been some, I put this in here about interim storage, because there has been discussion in the industry, my friends at NEI, about interim storage. We know Yucca Mountain's too hard, and it's too uncertain. Why don't we just go to interim storage? Let's go find two or three or four centralized sites around the country and create interim storage. Good luck. It ain't going to happen. You know, I haven't heard people say, well, you know, we've talked to like the governor of the state. You know, South Carolina is a friendly nuclear state, and they want to have a GNEP facility, and we put something. I'm telling you, talk to the governor's chief of staff in South Carolina. It ain't going to happen. Nobody wants an interim storage facility unless they know exactly when it's going to leave. And since you can't tell them when it's going to leave, it ain't going to happen. So I am not, you know, while when I came here, from my fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayer and the federal government, I want to reduce taxpayer liability associated with nuclear fuel standard contracts. And when I first came in, I thought interim storage might be a solution. I'm not there. I just don't think it's going to happen any faster than Yucca, and I don't think it's cost effective. But that's me. There's been a lot of discussion about how unfair the process was to the state of Nevada, and I showed the timeline. You know, as we got down to the selection of the last state, and somehow people kind of think it was kind of a dirty term that said, that was really a political process. Duh. It's recognized that when you're going to pick a site to put nuclear waste, no matter how many technical studies you do, no matter how many risk analyses you do, no matter how many years you spend drilling in the mountain, collecting data, what you are participating in is a technically informed political process. That's what it is. It's not a politically informed technical process. It's a technically informed political process. And when you take a look at how the law was set up here in the U.S. in terms of studying the sites, recommendation of the president, reports with a congressional oversight and a gubernatorial veto right and a congressional override of the gubernatorial veto. It's a political process. Any way you take it. So, that's the process we got, and I'd submit that any process to go anyplace else is going to also be the same. So here are the conclusions I've come to. Starting over is not an option. We got 30 years invested in the path we're on. Keep going until we can't go any further. If we get a license application and it gets bounced by the NRC and basically the site's got a fatal flaw, then I'd say then we gotta go back and start over. I don't think starting over is an option right now, and quite frankly, I think we can get this thing licensed. I think the site selection process was adequate, and the shortest path forward is to license and build Yucca. I have the last slide. So here's what I'm doing in the year I've got left in the job. My plan is to get a license application into the NRC. I don't know exactly when that's going to happen yet. I am cautiously optimistic that with the budget I've got for 08, I can still make that happen. We're still, to have your budget cut by $100 million a quarter away through the fiscal year is not the way I would normally manage a project in the private sector, but those are the cards I've been dealt. We're trying to figure out how to do that, and I will obviously be very public about what and when we'll do it when I have a better feel for that, but that's my path forward, is get that license application to the NRC, get the funding mechanism fixed. One of my favorite topics of, can DOE really pull this off? Does it have the technical capability and the managerial capability to pull this off? I'm spending at least half my time on getting the DOE organization, business processes, and people, trained staff, qualified to actually go do this, and I think we can make that happen. And then finally, the last piece is, I think everybody in this room knows that if you're going to have a program like this, it is not the optimum management solution to have a political appointee in charge of it who gets changed every 4 years. And, oh, by the way, the job stays vacant for about 2.5 of those 4 years. So you can judge you can draw your own opinions about whether or not the people who get that job are qualified to do it or not. I'll leave that up to you. But my point is that there are some different ideas that are being out there being discussed in DOE, as well as with the industry, about maybe setting up a different organizational structure to manage the total back end of the fuel cycle in a way that makes more business sense for the long term. So, in conclusion, that's my perspective, being in the job for a year and a half. And it may not be, if I offended anybody in terms of your vested interest in certain aspects of this program, I apologize. But from the person who's got the responsibility to go make this happen and move it forward, those are my lessons learned from the year and a half in the job. And my commitment to you is I'm not backing off of that. And I want to go make it happen. And my plan is to make it happen. Thanks.